The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Monday edition. Gonna get weird up in here, Dom.
Happy Weird Monday to you, Crudy Aaron, working the board. Thank you, buddy. And of course, our fair audience, thank you for tuning in to the political party of which you can be a part, 844-967-2789.
My understanding, Joe Biden has put an op-ed out at the Washington Post. We'll share his proposals for the U.S. Supreme Court, and I understand he may speak live on this topic during the show. So, pardon me, Aaron, if you can help us monitor and see if Biden speaks, we'd like to go there. Because that is an important topic. Nearly as important is how weird these Republicans have gotten. I want to start here with the weird. No, really, Republicans are getting weirder. Got an opinion piece to support this thought over at the Washington Post, Eugene Robinson. The GOP needs to convince voters that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are regular guys. And manifestly, they're not. We're regular guys, Dom. We're the sort of guys you'd want to go have a beer with. It would be strange for Democrats to attack the Republican presidential ticket for being weird if it weren't true. But those men are getting weirder by the day. Former President Donald Trump's running mate, J.D. Vance of Ohio, is off to a wobbly start. Well, that's a wobbly. Generous characterization.
It sure is.
A Harris 2024 campaign email sent on Friday was headlined, J.D. Vance is a creep who wants to ban abortion nationwide. The statement continued, J.D. Vance is weird. Voters know it. Vance is the most unpopular VP pick in decades. Let's not forget Tricky Dick Nixon was a VP once upon a time. It's bad enough when footage resurfaced of the 2021 interview in which Vance called Democrats a bunch of childless cat ladies who are miserable at their own lives and the choices that they've made. Things got
how to make friends and influence people? What, dude?
Well, he did offer a non-apology. Things got worse last week when Eugene Robinson says Vance offered a non-apology, blaming people for focusing so much on sarcasm and not on the substance of what I actually said.
Oh, yes, sarcasm. I guess I don't read sarcasm.
And as Eugene Robinson says, okay. But that doesn't help at all. The substance, which Vance said he stands by, is asserting that adults without children do not deserve an equal say in the nation's affairs. Another unearthed clip of Vance showed him arguing that parents, when they vote, should be able to cast an extra ballot for each child in their family who is under the voting age. Now, referencing back to my DNA dad, Chuck, who I bumped into over the weekend in Burlington, Iowa. Well, he's got three strays. Do those count on his tab? Right. He didn't take that back either. J.D. Vance didn't take it back, going only so far as to claim it was a thought experiment and not a firm policy position. Oh, is that what you're doing? Floating thought bubbles around here?
Just asking questions, Crudy.
Dom, the normal thing would have been for Vance to recognize that he had some dumb things, said some dumb things, and now regrets them. But being Trump's wingman means never having to say you're sorry. Actually, never being allowed to say you're sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a quote from the governor of the great state of Minnesota, Tim Walz, Tom. I think he was the first to characterize this guy as weird. These are weird people on the other side. Minnesota Governor Tim Walz said, "My God, they went after cat people. Good luck with that. Turn on the internet and see what cat people do when you go after them." I did, Dom. My Facebook stream was lit up by childless cat ladies last week telling me they weren't going to vote for Trump or JD Vance.
Eugene Robinson continues at the Washington Post. Trump is weird, too, and that's increasingly clear. Since last fall at campaign rallies, he has been regularly telling nonsensical stories about a boat, a battery, and a shark. When it was pointed out that the whole thing makes no sense and critics laughed at Trump's ignorance of basic physics, he insisted on his self-proclaimed infallibility. "It's actually not crazy and sort of a smart story," he told one crowd. Not in this universe, though. Trump also can't stop talking about the late, great Hannibal Lecter, a reference to the fictional cannibal serial killer portrayed by Anthony Hopkins in the 1991 film Silence of the Lambs. It's unclear where, quote, late great comes from, since the character does not die in the movie and Hopkins, the actor, is very much alive. Trump even repeated his Lecter riff during a 92-minute acceptance rant at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. No one knows why. He's weird, that's why. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, another of Harris's possible vice presidential picks, said on Sunday that Fox is getting older and stranger. It's hard to argue that.
Joe Biden taking the stage. We understand he's going to speak about his propositions for the Supreme Court. Let's take President Joe Biden being warmly welcomed.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Really. Thank you. Please. Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. Mr. Ambassador, thanks for that introduction, and above all, for your friendship over the years. There's literally one word that comes to mind every time I think of Andy Young. The word's integrity, absolute integrity. And thank you to the Johnson family for carrying forward the legacy of a truly great president and first lady. Your mom was incredible as well.
When I look at Trump and Vance, I think of one word, weird.
The same goes to Mark Upgrove, president of the LBJ Foundation. It's great to be back here. I thank you all and distinguished guests gathered here today. Look, I was in college at the University of Delaware in our early beginning years when I heard the news of that President Kennedy had been assassinated. I remember exactly like anybody in my generation remembers exactly where they were sitting, standing, or walking. I was on the steps of one of the university halls called Hullion Hall at the university, listening on a transistor radio with three other people. Seemed unbelievable. And then, later watching President Johnson help the nation find a way forward. In his first address after the tragedy, President Johnson said, and I quote, "Nothing could more eloquently honor President Kennedy's memory than the earliest passage of the Civil Rights Bill." That's what he said. As a kid coming up, I always admired President Johnson for his public service, whether it was a school teacher in South Texas, master of the United States Senate, historic vice president and president. His philosophy was simple. In a great society, no one should be left behind. It's time for us to come to see that every American gets a decent break and a fair chance to make good. And as Andy Young said, President Johnson met repeatedly with the civil rights leaders and built a coalition to bring that vision to life. And he did. He brought it to life. Over 50 years, the LBJ Foundation has convened this symposium to reflect one of the crowning achievements, the Civil Rights Act of 1964. a defining moment that has since opened doors of opportunities for all Americans, regardless of race, sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, religion, national origin. Together with the Voting Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act, these three landmark laws he signed are remarkable in their scale and their scope. Taken together, these three acts have made this nation fundamentally more fair, fundamentally more just, and most importantly, fundamentally more consistent with our founding principles. For real. And we're a better nation because of them. We must be clear. Their work, our work, is not done. It's not done. We do not celebrate these laws as part of our past, but as critical components of our future. President Johnson understood what President Lincoln understood in his own time, that the courts would determine the scale and scope, the scale and scope of our laws. Over 100 years after the Emancipation Proclamation, President Johnson vowed, in his words, to do this job that Lincoln started, to do this job that Lincoln started, by challenging the court to live up to its constitutional responsibility. He did that by nominating Thurgood Marshall as the first Black justice of the Supreme Court.
President Joe Biden speaking live from the LBJ Library, Austin, Texas.
But now we live in a different era. In recent years, extreme opinions that the Supreme Court has handed down have undermined long-established civil rights principles and protections. In 2013, the Supreme Court in Shelby County case gutted the Voting Rights Act, opening the floodgates to a wave of restrictive voting laws that have seen states across the country pass. In 2022, the court overruled Roe v. Wade and the right to choose that had been the law of the land for 50 years. 50 years. The following year, the same court eviscerated affirmative action, which had been upheld and reaffirmed for nearly 50 years as well. And now, there's an extreme movement and agenda called Project 2025. Well, by the way, they're serious, man.
President Joe Biden speaking from the Lyndon Baines Johnson Presidential Library, Austin, Texas. Sort of stays with the theme today. You know what the theme is in Austin, Texas? Keep Austin weird. These Republicans.
That's a fundamentally flawed view and a fundamentally flawed principle.
15 seconds.
A dangerous principle. On top of its extreme.
Stop.
60% of the time, they're right every time. The devil's advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. President Joe Biden speaking at the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, Texas. Aaron, let's go back to that sound now.
Including the Supreme Court backed by shadow special interests that also support Project 2025. Undisclosed gift to justice is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars from wealthy benefactors who have interest before the very court they're contributing to. Conflicts of interest from those connected to January 6th insurrectionists, and a blatant attack on nominating and confirming justices of the court itself. Do y'all remember when Justice Scalia died in February of 2016, and the Republicans blocked the president's nomination, President Obama's nomination, to fill that vacancy for nearly a year by making up an entirely new standard that there be no confirmations of the court during an election year. But then, when Justice Ginsburg died in 2020, Republicans rushed through the president's Trump's nominee at the very same time votes are being cast in an election that Trump would lose. It's outrageous. I know I don't look it, but I served in the Senate for 36 years. including as chairman and ranking member of the Judiciary Committee. I've been told that I've overseen more Supreme Court nominations as senator, vice president, and president than anyone in history, anyone alive today, I should say. I have great respect for our institutions and the separation of powers laid out in our Constitution. But what's happening now is not consistent with that doctrine of separation of powers. Extremism is undermining the public confidence in the court's decisions. As soon as I came to office, I convened a bipartisan presidential commission on the Supreme Court of the United States, comprised of leading constitutional scholars, both liberal and conservative, to provide recommendations on potential reforms to the court. I've been careful in these deliberations because these are serious, serious decisions. In the face of increasing threats to American democratic institutions, I use the commission's analysis, and today I'm calling for three bold reforms to restore trust and accountability to the court and our democracy. As a press shouted to me as I got off Air Force One, the Republican Speaker of the House said, "Whatever he proposes is dead on arrival." Well, I think his thinking is dead on arrival. First, I'm calling for a constitutional amendment called No One Is Above the Law Amendment. I mean this sincerely. It holds that there's no immunity for crimes former president committed while in office. I share our founders' belief that the president must answer to the law. The president is accountable in the exercise of the great power of the presidency. We're a nation of laws, not kings and dictators. The decision can be boiled down to the title of one case, Trump versus the United States. The court asserted it was making a ruling for the ages. That isn't true. The court made a ruling for one, a former president. No other president in our history has asked for this kind of immunity for criminal actions. And no president, no former president, not me, not one, has and should have been given any exception to this with such immunity. The second thing I'm asking for, we've had term limits for presidents of the United States for nearly 75 years after the Truman administration. And I believe we should have term limits for Supreme Court justices of the United States as well. In fact, the United States is the only major constitutional democracy that gives lifetime seats in their high court. Term limits would help ensure that the court membership changes with some regularity. That would make timing for the court's nomination more predictable and less arbitrary. Reduce the chance that any single presidency imposes undue influence in generations to come. The bipartisan commission I convened analyzed various term limit structures. Based on their report, I believe the best structure is the 18-year term limit. That would help ensure the country would not have what it has now, an extreme court that's proud of an attack on the confirmation process that's been weaponized by those seeking to carry out an extreme agenda for decades to come. By the way, these guys mean it. These guys mean it. Project 2025 is real. They mean it. Third, I'm calling for a binding code of conduct for the Supreme Court. Supreme Court's current ethics code is weak and, even more frightening, voluntary. Voluntary. Any code of Congress must be enforceable. Under the reform I propose, justice would be required to disclose gifts, refrain from public political activity, recuse themselves in cases in which they or their spouses have a financial or other conflict of interest. Most people don't realize that Congress passed a law decades ago that says all federal judges, including Supreme Court justices, have to recuse themselves in such cases. But the current justices insist on enforcing that requirement themselves without any public oversight or compulsion. See, that's their decision. They don't have to tell us how they made it. That might work if the court was actually enforcing those requirements, but they are not. The court is not self-policing. The court is not dealing with the obvious conflicts of interest. We need a mandatory code of ethics for the Supreme Court, and we need it now.
You're listening to President Joe Biden speaking live from the LBJ Library, Presidential Library, Austin, Texas. He put forth a proposition today. Now the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, said dead on arrival, how dare we try to hold the Supreme Court to recusal rules? Biden's proposition, no man or justice is above the law. Come back, more devils.
The devil's advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, Big Monday edition. We've been doing a live listening. President Joe Biden speaking about his newest proposition, the Supreme Court. And Joe's telling some sidewinders now. He's sort of off script. He's telling some stories about how he was encouraged to run for office and didn't want to go down to Dover, Delaware, where apparently state government was. And so someone told him, well, join the Common Council, you dumb SOB. It meets right across the street from you twice a week. And apparently Joe's sister ran the campaign, and against his better judgment, he won. And, you know, a 50-year career started from humble beginnings. But anyways, Joe Biden at the Washington Post today, my plan to reform the Supreme Court and ensure no president is above the law. We can and must prevent the abuse of presidential power and restore the public's faith in our judicial system. Now, I would point out Joe Biden, something of a lame duck. The fact that he is not running for re-election, I think, frees him up. He is unencumbered by a campaign dime. He can do whatever he wants. Here is what the president of the United States is proposing. This nation was founded on a simple yet profound principle. No one is above the law, not the president of the United States, not a justice on the Supreme Court of the United States, no one. But the Supreme Court's 6-3 decision on July 1st to grant presidents broad immunity from prosecution for crimes they commit in office means there are virtually no limits on what a president can do. The only limits would be those that are self-imposed by the person occupying the Oval Office. If a future president incites a violent mob to storm the Capitol and stop the peaceful transfer of power like we saw on January 6, 2021, there may be no legal consequences, and that's only the beginning. On top of dangerous and extreme decisions that overturn settled legal precedents, including Roe v. Wade, the court is mired in a crisis of ethics. Scandals involving several justices have caused the public to question the court's fairness and independence, which are essential to faithfully carrying out its mission of equal justice under the law. For example, and this is a big old fat one, I agree with the president as he lays it out. The undisclosed gifts to justices from individuals with interest in cases before the court, as well as conflicts of interest connected with the January 6th insurrectionists, raise legitimate questions about the court's impartiality. Joe Biden writes, I served as a U.S. senator for 36 years, including as chairman and ranking member of the Judiciary Committee. I've overseen more Supreme Court nominations as senator, vice president, and president than anyone living today. I have great respect for our institutions and the separation of powers. What is happening now is not normal, and it undermines the public's confidence in the court's decisions. including those impacting personal freedoms, we now stand in a breach, Dom.
Crudy, that is why, in the face of increasing threats to America's democratic institution, Joe Biden is calling for three bold reforms to restore trust and accountability to the courts and our democracy. We've heard it. We'll say them again. This is important, folks. First, calling for a constitutional amendment called No One Is Above the Law Amendment. It would make clear that there is no immunity for crimes a former president committed while in office. I share our founders' belief that the president's power is limited, not absolute. We are a nation of laws, not kings or dictators. Second, we have had term limits for presidents for nearly 75 years. We should have the same for Supreme Court justices. The United States is the only major constitutional democracy that gives lifetime seats to its high court. Term limits would help ensure that the court's membership changes with some regularity. That would make timing for court nominations more predictable and less arbitrary. It would reduce the chance that any single presidency radically alters the makeup of the court for generations to come. I support a system in which the president would appoint a justice every 2 years to spend 18 years in active service on the Supreme Court.
What do you think about this proposition, if I can interrupt you, Dom? 18 years. That's still a hell of a long time.
Still, he's got a long, right?
I mean, 10 years, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, for those listening in Wisconsin, they run for 10-year terms.
Yeah.
That seems like plenty to me. Let's take it a decade at a time. I can't make a 5-year plan. Dom can't make a 5-minute plan. How about a 10-year cap? And then, you know, could that person perhaps under Biden's plan be reappointed or just 18 and done?
Yeah. I get the 10, maybe more than 10, maybe less than 18. The president continues. Third, I'm calling for a binding code of conduct for the Supreme Court. This is common sense. The court's current voluntary ethics code is weak and self-enforced. Justices would be required to disclose gifts, refrain from public political activity, and recuse themselves from cases in which they or their spouses have financial or other conflicts of interest.
Looking at you, Ginny Thomas.
Right. Every other federal judge is bound by an enforceable code of conduct. There is no reason for the Supreme Court to be exempt. All three of these reforms are supported by a majority of Americans, as well as conservative and liberal constitutional scholars. And I want to thank the bipartisan Presidential Commission on the Supreme Court of the United States for its insightful analysis, which informed some of these proposals. We can and must prevent the abuse of presidential power. We can and must restore the public's faith in the Supreme Court. We can and must strengthen the guardrails of democracy. In America, no one is above the law. In America, people rule. Joe Biden, the president today, in his op-ed at the Washington Post, and of course, speaking at the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, Texas.
844-967-2789. You can speak to us, like Dick from Madison. Welcome, Dick. What do you got for us?
Hey, Dick.
I don't think he's going to go away quietly, guys. Do you?
Good.
And it's a good thing.
No, he shouldn't. I mean, he has the bully pulpit, man. He should do everything he can to protect democracy. Absolutely.
No. At the risk of, I hadn't heard the first hour of the show. Has anybody brought this to your attention about the villages in Florida?
No. What about them?
I did see, Dick, that there's, you know, they do the...
500-plus women.
Yeah, on their golf carts. Yep.
Now, this should be all over the news, and it's not. I mean, you couldn't get more red than that place. And you know, for every one of those 500-plus women in golf carts, there's probably at least half, again, as much, that are closeted and would like to get out there and ride their golf carts with them. But I think it's unbelievable that it hasn't been out there yet.
It's certainly a motivating sign, Dick. Thank you for the call and bringing it to our audience's attention. I did see some of the social media posts over the weekend. Yeah, the villages in Florida, man. That's pretty impressive, especially considering what we've seen from them over the years. 844-967-2789. Let's keep going. Peggy from Brooklyn, Wisconsin. Welcome, Peggy. What do you got for us?
I thought there were regulations in place already that they cannot accept gifts and they have to excuse themselves. I mean, why do we keep going around the circling the drain here? and push the subject, put them in jail, pull them off the court. Come on.
Well, unfortunately, the only way to get them off the court currently is death or impeachment. And, you know,
I thought we had laws in there that they're supposed to follow. And if they can't follow them, they should be pulled.
Well,
federal
court judges do have specific laws under which they are governed. But the decision for a U.S. Supreme Court justice to recuse, much like the corporate written ones here in the state of Wisconsin, Peggy, they effectively get to make the decision for themselves. And no one gets to look over their shoulder or question, what was the rationale you used to make this decision? You know, whether or not it's...
I thought there were laws that we could implement right now. I mean, I thought they were in place.
No, ma'am. Not sufficiently, Peggy. That's
not the proposition. Right. I mean,
from President
Biden. What happened?
Well, it just seems like we go around and around in circles sometimes, and it's like, okay, I could have swore we had a law on the books, and then they'll go, well, not exactly. And I'm like, no, here we go again. You and I would be in jail. We'd been pulled over.
Uh-huh, exactly. A law for thee, Peggy, not for me. Thank you for the call.
Our understanding, Clarence Thomas has been the recipient of over $4 million in gifts, many of which he did not disclose on his federal disclosure form. So, A, they're subject to disclosure. B, gifts greater than, I believe, $16,000 per year under federal tax codes are subject to taxation. If someone gives you a grandiose gift, you got to pay taxes. It has not been established to my satisfaction that Clarence Thomas has done that, which would make him, what, a tax cheat. I think Hunter Biden's going to trial for that in September. So, non-disclosure, probably maybe no taxes paid, meeting the federal statutes.
And how do we get to find out? Who finds that out? You know what I'm saying? Who does that investigation?
But when we're talking about personal gifts, I mean, hell, here in the state of Wisconsin, money was given to the campaigns of guys like David Prosser. David Prosser was a former lawmaker turned Supreme Court justice, corrupted, I would say, by the grandiose gifts given to him by industry, millions of dollars. And he was supposed to make a ruling and had the choice to make here in the state of Wisconsin. Should he recuse or not? And his rationale, well, I received those grandiose multi-million dollar campaign donations more than a year ago. So, you know, how impactful could they be? It's been 366 days.
Crudy, it's not a bribe. It's a gratuity, baby.
But these were gifts given directly to the justice. It's not like they have to go run for something on the Supreme Court level. It's a lifetime appointment under the current rules and laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you can get millions personally from someone who's a future litigant before the court, perhaps, and then not be forced to recuse when their cases come before the court. And quite frankly, if it were not for the fine reporting of ProPublica, we wouldn't know any of this because Clarence didn't tell us through his required disclosures.
Tell us, and perhaps not to pay taxes on any of it. But what happened? He had like $250,000, what, forgiven for his camper? You know what I'm saying? What happened there? What's the story? Where's the tax? Have you paid all your taxes, Clarence?
What about the real estate that Harlan Crow bought from his mom and renovated for his mom and a $500,000 trip to Bali on a super yacht? I mean, that's probably exquisite travel, Dom. I've never experienced that. Next time it won't be the circus for you, my friend. Nothing but super yacht travel.
Yeah, I need better friends. 844-967-2789.
Well, maybe if you were a Supreme Court justice, you might be worthy of buying.
Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey guys, perhaps the emoluments clause of the Constitution should be expanded to include gifts of over a certain size from people within the United States, because it currently bans taking emoluments from foreign governments and foreign princes and all that kind of thing. But it should actually be that our current aristocracy that we have that apparently is dispensing it a largesse to our judges and system. And you're making the point that before or after the fact, a bribe is a bribe. Calling it a gratuity is just putting lipstick on a pig. And those guys are hogs at the trough, it seems like. You know, Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito and little Brett Kavanaugh, who got all his debts paid off, and and who knows what.
Yeah, what a sweet deal. Gotten. Someone paid off like $75,000 worth of credit card debt for Brett Kavanaugh before he had to go explain how he might be financially compromised?
Yeah, well, and he never did explain why he might be financially compromised or say that any time that anybody's related to that is going to have, I'll have to recuse myself. Or even tangentially connected with that. The whole point of it is that these people should be getting a salary, and that should be it. I mean, that's what the founders were worried about. If we can't have these guys, like under the monarchy that we had, they would just take money from whoever they wanted or just say, well, the king does it, so that's okay. Well, BS to that.
Well, Mark, if you don't know about it, then I guess you don't have to worry about it, right? And while I applaud the president and his three, you know, tiers of trying to get a handle on these things, no one is above the law, a constitutional amendment, the term limits of 18 years, or U.S. Supreme Court justices, and a binding code of conduct. What I did not hear, maybe we're just going to have to wait and see how this, you know, rolls out. Expanding the court, man.
Packing the court, if you will.
Expanding the court.
You know, come back.
844-967-278.
Do you have the time?
The Devil's Advocates. Making radio great again.
And everything all at once.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Going back to the lines. Talk or text. Hit us up. 844-967-2789. Annie from Watertown. You are up. Welcome, Annie. What do you got for us?
Talking about courts, I've been hearing a lot more whining about this liberal court we have now here in Wisconsin, but you brought up Prosser's name, and I hope people will remember that not only did he assault another justice, but which anybody, any one of us would have been in jail with a domestic violence, even if they weren't dating, or it's still, you get nailed for doing something like that.
I've wanted to choke Dom many times, but jail is a deterrent.
Yes, yes. But also don't forget that he came out and admitted that he also committed the crime that, Jensen, was it? The Republican, he got away with it because he moved his case to Waukesha under Schimmel.
Annie, I don't know if you were listening at 3:30, but we had Chuck Kwala in the studio today. And you know, Chuck Kwala and Scott Jensen had entirely different outcomes. Kwala went to jail for campaign politics, and Scott Jensen was charged with the felony and then let off the hook effectively, I believe, by a Waukesha County judge. And now he's one of the highest paid lobbyists in the state of Wisconsin. Jensen funneling millions right here to the great state of Wisconsin.
Wow.
And getting paid well for it, Annie.
And then Schimmel was
if he had that felony charge.
And then Schimmel was paid off well by becoming attorney general for giving a deal to Jensen. But Prosser later confessed that he had also committed that same crime of the campaigning under.
Yes. When he was an assembly leader, that was kind of the way they did it, man. There was the whole caucus scandal. And instead of going to jail or being charged, he sort of bumped up to the Supreme Court.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sort of. I don't know. Was he bragging that I didn't get caught or whatever? But I mean, he was a justice of our Supreme Court. And he confessed to committing a crime that others went to jail for. And, the attention it got was, just pretty much nothing.
I noticed they renamed the, what is it called? The former Prosser School of Law, or not School of Law, like Law Center or something. They've renamed. And that apparently was the doing of the four liberals on the court. Prosser no longer honored by naming something legally here in the state of Wisconsin. I think Abrahamson now honored as such.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you for the call, Annie. Let's keep going down the lines. Don from Milwaukee, 844-967-2789. Welcome, Don.
Hey, Don.
Oh, yeah. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I really enjoy your show. You guys really work good together. You're like that Martin and Lewis team. You know, anyhow, I got a quick comment here about I would like to see two people fired for not doing their job. Number one, Merrick Garland. Number two, Josh Call. They had all kinds of goods on Ron Johnson for fake electors, and they got all kinds of goods on Trump for trying to overthrow the government. We vote for you guys. Do your job. Hold these criminals accountable. I'm sick and tired of voting and then turn around and you let these damn crooks. If the shoe was on the other foot, if William Barr, if Biden did what Trump did, you think William Barr wouldn't put Joe Biden in jail? So that's all I got, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Don. Obviously, Merrick Garland never had to earn the votes, but when Joe Biden spoke today, the president spoke from the LBJ Library, Austin, Texas. He mentioned, he referenced specifically the circumstance of Merrick Garland never getting an up or down vote, never getting a hearing for Supreme Court. And of course, that was the beginning of the bad stuff, Tom. It started with that seat.
Yeah.
And then what, you got the Gorsuch. And then you got the Kavanaugh. And then, you know, because we completely changed the rules, because we don't give a damn. We're Republicans. We're just weird like that. And then you got your Amy Coney Barrett and a 6-3 advantage on the court that then turned around and ruled not just Dobbs, but also presidential immunity. But on a case-by-case basis, so come revisit us every time you need to get out of jail free card, Trump.
And now what? Judge Chutkan in D.C. has to go through the activities of the former president when he was doing his criming and determine whether or not those criming activities were done under the color of his official act or if it was, you know, done as a private citizen. It's tough, Don. Certainly, Josh Call has what he's leveled some charges against some of the attorneys involved.
Well, Roman Cheeseboro and Troupas. And I said at the time, I don't think he's fishing downstream anymore, meaning I don't think there will ever be charges leveled against the fake electors here in the state of Wisconsin. But Don's complaint was about U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, who apparently was the conduit to deliver the fake electors for both the state of Michigan and Wisconsin, right? And I would say, Josh, you could still go upstream, couldn't you, sir? Could still look for bigger fish to fry, to indict, to hold accountable. So I haven't given up hope on Josh Call. Merrick Garland, that guy's been late to the party his whole life. Come back with us, Dom. Never late for the party.
First one there, last one to leave.
You know, Michael Moore's got some propositions, Dom. 99 days and a wake up. November 5th is the election day. Michael Moore, his proposition, and your phone calls. A happier happy hour, Monday style. Don't make it weird. Just call us, 844-967-2789.